you can live the life you want. Blindness is not what holds you back.
Live the life you want. Nobody can stop you. Shoot for the sun and break on through. So you're blind, you'll be fine. We got good news. You can live the life you want. Yes, we know the truth. Grab a cane, get trained. Gotta get moving. Make a change and a wage. That's what we're doing. Come with me, yeah. And live the life you want. Nobody can stop you. Shoot for the sun and break on through. So you're blind, you'll be fine. We got good news. You can live the life you want. Yes, we know the truth. You and me, NFB, let's dream together. NFB, you and me, lives on forever. You will see, yeah. Live the life you want. Nobody can stop you. Shoot for the sun and break on through. So you're blind, you'll be fine. We got good news. You can live the life you want. Yes, we know the truth. You can live the life you want. Yes, we know the truth.
You can live the life you want. Blindness is not what holds you back.
For more information about the National Federation of the Blind, please visit www.nfb.org.
National Federation of the Blind 2020 convention is now in session. Welcome everyone to our 2020 state convention. We are happy to have you, and we hope that you will enjoy and learn and be feel empowered by what you learn. We know that we have blind people joining and along with our sighted friends, and we appreciate everyone for being here. So to begin, I want to do some housekeeping things. We will be having door prizes. If you raise your hand, and then we'll unmute you and you can say you're here. This is an exciting time for us to do this on Zoom. It's definitely different. We're used to having everyone together. We hope that everyone feels like they can be connecting with everyone. And we appreciate the effort that people have made to spread our message around and help people find out about the convention. So the first thing on our agenda is Anil is our national representative. He is the director of initiatives for the National Federation of the Blind. And he's going to share with us his interpretation of our pledge, the NFB pledge, we call it.
Thanks, Bonnie. I'm glad to be with my NFB of Alaska family without the jet lag. But I do wish that I was there, because there is no substitute for being in the physical space with our friends and our family that we share this journey together. So I will start first just simply by reciting. And this is normally what we do when we start many meetings of the Federation. And it's a affirmation by our members of the commitment that we have for the organization. And it goes, I pledge to participate actively in the effort of the National Federation of the Blind to achieve equality, opportunity, and security for the blind, to support the policies and programs of the Federation, and to abide by its constitution. It's a very short pledge, but I'm glad to have the opportunity to break it down, because I think that even many of our members don't recognize all that's encompassed in these simple words. So starting with I think that that's just a real affirmation that you make an individual decision to take this pledge. And a pledge is something powerful, in my opinion. It's a verbal affirmation that you're committing to what comes after. Many of us are, of course, are familiar with our Pledge of Allegiance for our nation. So the pledge, in my opinion, is something that's very serious and sacred. To participate actively is next. And I think that the actively is very important. So everybody understands what participate means. That means putting your shoulder to the wheel, you know, adding your contribution to whatever effort you're engaging. Actively is a criteria that raises the bar. Many people like to try to phone it in, and it's just not possible for us as an organization to create the systemic change that we really need to if we're not active in that engagement, active in that participation. So I pledge to participate actively. And what are people pledging to participate actively in? Let's break that down. In the effort of the National Federation of the Blind. I think it's very important to pause here, and just for people who don't know the organization that well, the National Federation of the Blind is exactly that. It's a national organization of 52 affiliates across the country, all 50 states plus the District of Columbia and Puerto Rico. Federation means all of these affiliates are affiliated with our national office, which is located in Baltimore, Maryland, through a charter. So our national organization exists nationwide because of our affiliation of all of our 52 affiliates that are across the country. And each affiliate, it's its own autonomous nonprofit, but it's that charter of affiliation that allows us to work in concert. You hear a lot of times, you hear collective action, because we all understand and believe in the same philosophy. National Federation of is a very key word, of the blind. So one, I'll say of is very important because we want to be blind led and blind run. Of those 52 affiliates and our national office, all of our presidents are blind. So on our affiliate levels, we oftentimes have a president, a first vice president, and sometimes a second vice president. Those individuals by constitution are required to be blind because we want to be authentic to the voice of blind people. And we are accountable to our members in a way that reflects our lived experience. Our national board of directors, 17 members, all blind, again, practicing what we preach. And I would also offer at this particular time, the word blind to us as an organization is simply a characteristic. Many people think that blind means totally blind, but we as a national organization encompass in our family every individual who's blind and low vision. So anyone who cannot see what would be considered 20/20 with corrective lenses like glasses, we count them as a brother and a sister in our movement, because when you see differently than society thinks is quote unquote normal, whether you want to embrace it or not, many people are going to see you as blind. So we teach people that there's a positive concept that you can really obtain around yourself by recognizing that blindness is only one of the characteristics that defines or describes you. So that's the National Federation of the Blind. So in the efforts of the National Federation of the Blind, then it goes on to broadly define what those efforts are. To achieve equality, opportunity, and security for the blind. And that's a progressive mandate. Since our founding in 1940, we have actively worked to achieve equality. And I would go say now in the current context of the discussions we're having, true equity. Because in many instances, some of the pitfalls that we face as blind people is the perception that we're seeking equality. And then we are seeking for equal rights. But in many instances, our equality really boils into equity. So we're not asking for simply the same computers that everyone else uses. We're making sure that those computers are equipped with access technology that allows us to be equally competitive with our sighted peers. And that's equity. So equality, opportunity. That's something that's really interesting in the face of the discrimination that we as blind people face. In many instances, the discrimination that we face is limiting opportunity, but in a way that is not meant to do it intentionally or out of malice. Many people try to custodialize our lived experience. So rather than allowing us to exercise the independence and the freedom that we know that we can exercise, they tend to treat us in a way that makes us beneficiaries of everyone else's goodwill. Let me do that for you. Don't you worry about that. And that doesn't really allow us to grow and reach our full capacity. And it also doesn't let society benefit from all of the stuff, all of the things that we have to offer through our talents as well. Equality, opportunity, and security. Security is an interesting word in the pledge as well. Many people think that this is revolving around the advocacy that we've done around Social Security. As a civil rights organization of blind individuals, we recognize that there needed to be a floor of financial support that allowed us to at least have some degree of quality of life while we strive for that full participation. So the Social Security benefits that blind people receive as a result of the advocacy of the National Federation of the Blind are a little more robust than those of just people with other disabilities. But I think in the context of the pledge, security is just security in our knowledge and belief that we truly can be fully participating members of society. And that way, that is reflective on both sides of the equation. We work primarily as an organization to reinforce to each and every blind person that given the proper proper training and opportunity. You too can be as competitive as any sighted member of society. You do have value, and you are able to live, work, and play in your communities right alongside the sighted. And we also in that framework tell sighted individuals or society overall that we have talent, skill, ability, and even more importantly, the desire to be fully participating members of that society. So that's what we're looking to do, to achieve equality, opportunity, and security for the blind. And in order to do that, we must work as a unified body. So we do that by to support the policies and programs of the Federation. Many people mistake the Federation into thinking that it's some lockstep organization that follows the leader, our national president. We have no degree of autonomy and our voices aren't. And that's completely opposite. The policies and the programs, well, I'll speak with the policies. The policies of the Federation are defined by our 50,000 members across the country. We have an annual convention every year. We normally have anywhere from 3,000 to 3,500 people in attendance. This past year, we did it virtually. We had over 10,000 people in that touch points, and we recognized that some of those 10,000 were actually streaming the convention in rooms that had 20 to 50 people. So it was probably more exponential impact than we've ever had in our national convention presence. Excuse me. But the convention is the supreme authority of our national organization. And during convention, we offer, deliberate on, and pass resolutions that define the policies of the Federation for the subsequent year. We had a host of them this year that were passed. And the reality is our national president, who has to stand for election every 2 years, has a dynamic role. He's both the CEO or chief executive officer of our national presence in Baltimore. Just as an aside, we own a whole city block in Baltimore. We purchased it back in 1978 for $532,000. Now it's worth well over $20 million, and it's all paid for. We don't operate in debt. As a nonprofit, we're very financially responsible, and we don't want our donations to go toward paying off any interest, toward any mortgage. All of it goes toward the programs that I'll define a little bit later. But the policies that are established during our resolutions are then required by the president to use the resources that we have to bring to bear from the staff that we have at our national office, but also our membership across the country to effect systemic change in the lives of blind people. And again, as an elected president every 2 years, that means he is directly accountable to our membership. And that's what's really interesting when I talk to many of our corporate partners. They talk to President Rick Abono and say, well, can't you just tell your members? And we have to get them to understand, no, our members tell us. So the policies of the Federation are designed, developed, deliberated, passed, and implemented by our members. And the programs of the Federation are defined through our everyday experience. So when we find out that our education system is only teaching 10% of blind students Braille, when we recognize that with the 70% unemployment rate that's out there for blind people, of the 30% of the blind people that are employed, 90% of them know Braille. There's a direct correlation between Braille and gainful employment. So why is it the school only teaches 10% of the students? Because they don't understand blindness the way that we do. In many instances, they're teaching low vision students who have to read by holding the print up to their face. Not to read, they don't teach them Braille. But we recognize as an organization that those particular students should be what we call dual media learners. They should learn how to use their functional vision. We're not trying to prohibit them from taking advantage of any residual vision that they have, but they should also learn to read Braille because it offers more tools in their toolbox. So when their eyes become fatigued or as they progress in school, and we all know that the print gets smaller and smaller as you achieve more academic vigor. So we make sure that they have more tools in their toolbox. We have a lived experience that gets us to understand what is going to be necessary in order to maintain a degree of competitiveness and integration into society. So those programs that we define, like our Bell program, Bell Academy, Braille Enrichment Literacy Through Learning, meets that challenge by offering every 2 weeks. Let me correct that. Over the summer for a 2-week period, we actually bring students in who otherwise wouldn't be getting access to Braille, and we teach them the fundamentals. But even more importantly, we teach them that Braille, the misconceptions about Braille and its utility are flawed. Braille is not cumbersome. It's not too bulky. It's not hard to learn. It's just an academic pursuit that many blind students should be engaging in order to make sure that they can be successful and live full lives. That 2-week period doesn't make them literate or overly proficient in Braille, but by shifting their paradigm and the way they think about it, then we help the parents go back to the school systems and add Braille as part of their individualized education program. We do the same with the programs that we present around vocational rehabilitation. I notice there are vocational rehabilitation professionals on this call, and I'm hoping that you are the professionals that recognize that the Federation is not competing against any professionals in blindness. We respect and appreciate people who've made a decision to explore this as a career, because many of us, especially me, would not be here without people who've made that commitment and dedication. But again, we recognize that through our lived experience, all of the things that you learn through your academic pursuit, through your professional training, can be complemented by the lived experience of blind people. And that's why we developed our structured discovery training methodology. People fought against us with our promoting the long white cane. But I recognize that many of the traditional professionals in orientation mobility now are ascribing the use of a longer white cane. Again, we've known this because we have to walk with that cane every day. It's not just something we do during the class time. I've already talked about Braille and also the benefit of knowing all the alternative skills of blindness that allow us to live independently in our homes and the direct impact that has on our ability to go out and seek gainful employment. So we recognize that through our lived experience that we can complement you and your professional acumen to make sure that the blind people that you serve are better served. So those are the programs that we implement. So we have three training centers across the country, Louisiana Center, Colorado, Blind Incorporated, and we're continuing to promote our structured discovery philosophy around education and rehabilitation. And hopefully we'll be able to share that with you in a more formal way soon. We have some other programs that are going to be developed. So support the policies and programs of the Federation. That's what our members do. And the way we're able to do this programming is because we are a volunteer organization. And that's one of the true power cores. So let me give one example of how powerful it is. With the beginning of the STEM era, when everybody's pursuing science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, and we're recognizing that these are going to be the careers of the future. Many blind students are getting passed up because the school systems didn't know how to teach science, technology, engineering to blind students. We couldn't stand for that. So Dr. Maurer, who was president at the time, trusted then executive director Mark Riccobono, who's now our president, to develop a program that really challenged that particular misperception. So he designed a program we call our USLAM. We brought 200 blind kids in from across the country. And we partnered with Johns Hopkins University. And those students stayed on that campus for a week. And during that whole week, we had them building and launching rockets. We had them dissecting sharks. We had them programming robots, doing nanoscience, building all types of engineering types of projects. We would not have been able to conduct that program had it not been for the 100 blind successful adults that volunteered their time to travel to Baltimore for that whole week and serve as mentors and teachers during that whole week. And that's the power of our organization, and that's the commitment that our members show. So we are a proven record of supporting the policies and programs of the Federation and to abide by its constitution. That's really core. I mentioned it earlier. The Constitution of the National Federation of the Blind outlines the framework in which we operate. One of the major principles in that Constitution is the affirmation that our conventions are the supreme authority. It defines the responsibilities of our president, which we give a lot of autonomy to because we recognize that he has to be able to be agile and dynamic in dealing with those things that pop up. So we want our president to be able to allocate resources when we find out that another blind parent who just gave birth has had their child taken away because some social worker thinks that blind people can't raise children. We want to make sure that our president has the ability to direct the resources that are necessary when someone has been discriminated against in a job environment. We want our president to be able to direct those resources to meet the already defined policies that have come from our Federation Convention. So that Constitution defines all of that, but even more so, it's the framework for the constitutions that all of our 52 affiliates also adopt. And that's what gives us our power. That's what allows us to work toward creating systemic change in a way that we refer to as collective action. It's not a top-down authoritarian rule. It's a consensus of understanding how we're going to operate as an organization, how are we going to perform in concert with one another to meet that common goal. So again, it's very simple to understand why I pledge to participate actively in the efforts of the National Federation of the Blind to achieve equality, opportunity, and security for the blind, to support the policies and the programs of the Federation, and to abide by its constitution. And I'd like to offer, and I hope it's okay, Bonnie, I think that you have me scheduled till about 40 minutes after. I'd like to pivot. Because I don't want you to think that particular presentation around the organization speaks to our true power. It's static. It's academic. It provides a framework for people to understand. But I especially want to take this opportunity to share on this level to individuals that don't know the Federation, to individuals who see us externally. Because in many instances and many times people see us, well, they're those hell raisers. And yeah, we raise hell when hell is necessary. There are those individuals that litigate. Yes, we actually litigate when it's necessary. But we are much more loving and much better partners than most people externally even realize. It's just unfortunate that so many of those things are more sexy than the work that we do. So yeah, we're going to get news coverage when we sue a big corporation, right? We're going to do that. We're going to get news coverage when we raise a little sand down in the halls of Congress. And unfortunately, they don't see that the majority of the work that we do and the power and influence that we have in D.C. is because of the relationships that we build with our public officials. They're not going to see that the power that we have with respect to making websites accessible is not the litigation against those people who don't do it. It's our partnership with those who come to understand that it's important and it makes sense as a business case. So I want to share on a personal level really quickly. I lost my sight in 1989. I was 25 years old at the time. And at that particular time, I was on a VP track at a local savings and loan, and I was going to be a vice president at the bank. And I lost my sight because I went in on Friday. Everything was fine. Went in on Monday and could not read my computer screen. My vision had deteriorated so drastically that the print on those CRTs was far too small for me to even read. My life changed. I didn't change other than I could no longer see. But all of the people who felt I had capacity on Friday didn't feel I had capacity on Monday. All of the people that came to me for advice and assistance on Friday didn't think I had anything else to offer on Monday. I was still a Neil Lewis. I recognized that now I had a challenge to make sure that I was able to still participate in this world because I still had the desire and the internal fortitude to want to do so. And luckily for me, I found the National Federation of the Blind because my knowledge of blindness at that time was really my older brother and older sister who had lost their sight in the way the retinitis pigmentosa is supposed to affect you. It was supposed to be a slow, progressive deterioration of my vision, but mine had said happened over the weekend. And although they were equally as bright as I, equally as intelligent as I, they ended up working at the Georgia Industries for the Blind, which at that particular time was a sheltered workshop. They were getting paid wages based on their piecemeal work. And I knew they had greater capacity, but I didn't know anything about blindness. I didn't know anything about trying to give them skills training to make sure that they could do more, do better, achieve academically and pursue greater career opportunities. And I thought that was going to be my destiny, that I was going to end up at the Georgia Industries for the Blind. And had I not found the National Federation of the Blind, that probably would have been my destiny. When I found the National Federation of the Blind, I found hope. I found hope that I could reclaim my life and then again be the person that I had aspired to be. And I feel somewhat blessed. And many people say that the disability is a blessing. I haven't gotten to that point yet, but I do feel blessed that this particular instance in my life made me choose a different course. I no longer wanted to be a VP of a bank, which I think at most I would have been able to help people who may not have gotten home loans based on some discriminatory practice. But it made me want to go into a world where, much like professionals that are on this call now, that my talent would actually make a difference in someone's life. I wanted to pay it forward. I wanted to make sure that those people who were interacting in my life to make sure that I could reclaim my destiny were supported in the work that I do and pass that forward to other individuals. So it gave me hope and energy. I felt so liberated. Once the Federation showed me that I needed to, one, be okay being blind, develop that positive self-concept, learn the problem-solving skills, you know, that were necessary. Two, master the alternative skills of blindness. Make sure I'd learn Braille, despite the fact that people were telling me I didn't need it. Because at that particular time, my vision, again, was low, but now it's light perception. So I'm glad I learned Braille at that time. Taught me to use a long white cane. I could go into stories and stories about the different training there. Taught me to master the alternative skills of accessing computers, which, you know, you have to be technically literate in this world if you're going to be competitive. So mastering those alternative skills of blindness was important. So the Federation taught me that was important. The Federation helped me acquire a skill set that allowed me to cope with those public attitudes around blindness. Because I'm going to tell you, it's hard living as a blind person in this world because people have not come to know blind people. So when I leave my house every day, I'm going to be confronted with individuals that, out of ignorance, but sometimes out of misguided compassion, going to treat me like a child, be somewhat offensive. And I have to learn how to cope with those attitudes and perceptions about blindness in a way that doesn't make them leave thinking that I'm the to a pitiful blind person. So I had to learn with them, learn to cope. I had to learn how to blend in into society. And the Federation also gave me the energy to want to give back. And I dedicated a significant amount of my time prior to coming to work at the National Center for the work of the Federation. And I'm just pleased that now it's my job. And no matter how hard the days are and how long the days are, when my head hits the pillow at night, it's been a good day because I've had the energy to make a difference in people's lives. The biggest benefit, the greatest strength that the Federation has is our love. And I think that goes unrecognized by people outside of the organization. And unfortunately, I think some people within the organization have not really had the opportunity to experience the heart and the love of the Federation. But when I went blind, there were so many avenues that had I not had the love and support of my Federation family, it would have crushed me. The Federation helped me deal with the potential custody suit over my son. The Federation helped me deal with the tremendous time in my life when I was the primary caretaker of my mom, who was dying of cancer. Because society would have told me that I couldn't do either of those things, that a blind person is incapable and that they're responsible for a blind person to even take on those responsibilities. But the Federation supported me, taught me the techniques to do so, and also loved me through all of the sorrow of losing my mom and the joy of being able to get full custody of my son, who's now 23 years old and living the life that he wants. So it's that love of the Federation that I think a lot of people miss. So we're not just that organization out there that's suing everybody. We're not that organization that's out there just raising all kinds of sand. We are truly a family that loves one another, supports one another. And our value statement really kind of sums it up. Each and every day, I'm filled with hope, energy, and love by participating in the National Federation of the Blind. Because, you know, every day my expectations are raised. The contributions I offer make a difference to myself and to others. And overwhelmingly, I can share all of my successes, joys, and some with sorrows with my Federation family. So I hope that helps you guys understand the Federation a little more, at least from my perspective. I hope that you would be willing to take the pledge. Remember, all of the leaders have to be blind, but all of our members don't have to be. We welcome sighted people as well. We don't discriminate. We love for you to come be a part of what we're trying to do. And we know that many sighted people have what we call a Federation heart, and we're hoping that we can entice you to come be part of our movement.
Thank you, Neil, for delivering
this
that.
This is the fun part. This is fun.
I know. Yeah, he keeps telling me that. And it is the fun part. I have to tell you, I want to share with you that I have known Anil since I moved to Georgia in 2007. And he was the president in Georgia at that time. I had the opportunity to serve on the parents' board. I will say that he was such a good mentor for me. So we had a convention. I have to tell this story because Anil and I still talk about it and laugh about it. I was the one representing the parents at our state convention that year. So the parents didn't have very many people there, but we did go out to lunch. So Neil was talking to us and saying, okay, I want everyone in all the divisions to get up and really talk about what their division is doing. But I don't want anyone just getting up here and say, yeah, we went out to lunch. And of course, in my mind, I heard that. Well, we haven't had a lot of meetings, but we were able to go out to lunch. As soon as the words came out of my mouth, it hit me and I was like, oh my gosh, I just said the wrong thing.
It tickled me so.
Yeah, and Anil was like falling on the floor laughing. Garrick Scott had to take over because Anil was laughing so hard. And I was totally embarrassed. But
I thought you had done it on purpose.
I just want you to know that I really appreciate Anil. He's a great man and has been a significant role model for me. I have to tell you that each time I've heard him talk, I have learned something new. And in fact, when he talked, I knew about his sister, but I did not know he also had a brother with RP. And to hear, and I didn't realize they both worked in basically piecemeal sheltered workshops. And mm-hmm. You can tell how bright Anil is if his siblings are anything like him. Thank you so much, Anil, for sharing all that important stuff with us.